This is your evening news roundup from WCMU for Thursday, October 15th. I'm Amy Robinson. A Wisconsin man faces a Michigan criminal charge of material support of a terrorist plot. As we hear from Rick Pluta, he's the eighth person facing state charges as part of an alleged plot to kidnap Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
51-year-old Brian Higgins is being held in Wisconsin awaiting extradition to Antrim County. A Michigan State Police and FBI affidavit says a joint investigation found Higgins helped with surveillance and digital recording of the governor's northern Michigan vacation home. The state police and the FBI say Higgins is part of the Wolverine Watchmen, described as an anti-government, anti-law enforcement militia group. The plotters were allegedly planning to grab Whitmer and put her on trial for treason over her COVID-19 executive orders. An FBI agent also testified some of the men were part of another alleged plot targeting Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. I'm Rick Pluta.
A bipartisan pair of bills in the state house would hold shipping vessels and oil pipeline operators more responsible for being negligent in the Straits of Mackinac. Operators of a large boat that puts down an anchor or chains could pay up to $10,000 and face a four-year prison sentence. Democratic Representative Rachel Hood says pipeline operators like Enbridge would have to mark their lines so large vessels could see where they are.
We do, however, require that the pipeline operator buoy the line each year and make the investment in making sure that the buoys are operational throughout the year.
The Line 5 was damaged by a dragging cable as recently as this spring. A Coast Guard investigation found Enbridge's own contracted vessels were responsible. 5 months after a devastating flood destroyed much of the village of Sanford, some residents say they're bouncing back. Others say they're just doing their best to prepare for winter. Ben Thorpe takes us there for an update.
In May, CJ's Hairstyling in downtown Sanford was destroyed. The insides were covered in the same layer of mud that blanketed much of the town after the dam just up the street collapsed.
Hi. Hey, how you doing?
Now, owner Connie Mettner is giving a haircut.
I'm so busy that I can barely get out of bed in the morning. I'm so crippled, but I'm not complaining one bit. It's better than being home all the time. So yeah, and this is the best place I could ever dream of having.
Mettner reopened her doors last week and says she's been booked up with hair appointments ever since. That's good because Mettner says she's paid for a new place with a mixture of grant money from the Midland Area Community Foundation, personal savings, and donations.
We used up our savings. We used every penny we've ever had, and now we live every moment paycheck to paycheck.
Down the street from Connie, on the west end of the village, construction workers are in the process of repaving the road into town. Ray Bowers's R&R Auto Sales sits near this construction. It was one of the store's hardest hit by the flood. He says his own house near the now-drained Wixom Lake was also flooded.
So I'm trying to get a home to live in now. This has been, had to wait. And it's just a hard time trying to get anybody to help.
Bauer says he's been living out of a trailer while he repairs his home. FEMA has helped cover the cost of a new furnace, but wouldn't cover the cost of his hot water heater. His frustrations mounted when he realized the Small Business Administration would only offer loans to help restart his business.
At 66 years old, I didn't plan on starting over. And I says, I don't want a loan. I says, I can't afford to pay it back. I have no job. I have no income. So how do you expect me to pay it back?
The Four Lakes Task Force has proposed a $338 million plan to rebuild and renovate the dams impacted by the flooding and to restore the drained Wixom and Sanford Lakes. The plan would require local homeowners in the region to help pay for the project, sometimes to the tune of thousands of dollars every year. The plan does not require homeowners' approval. Bowers says he doubts he could afford it.
Why should we have to pay for something somebody else caused? That don't make sense. Taxpayers have always done that. Bailed everybody out, but not this time.
County officials say they are still in the process of determining how many area residents are living in tents or trailers heading into the winter. As of October 15th, $27 million in FEMA assistance have gone to assist residents impacted by the flooding.
Buddy.
Yeah. Penny Tyler is a Sanford resident who had a house donated to her by Great Lakes Homes.
And the floods took everything from me. but I got gifted.
Tyler's home is a one story that she occupies with her little dog, Bugs. She says, at least on her street, residents are doing well.
So I'm not sure how many people are still in tents and motorhomes or RVs, you know. I don't see it myself, but I know that there are still people needing a lot of help. We got winter coming up, and it's going to be cold. It's already cold.
Tyler says she isn't so sure she wants the Sanford Dam to be rebuilt at all.
If they ever put that back together, I'm not too keen. I don't know if I really want them to. We never even looked at it like a risk before. Nobody thought this was going to happen. I mean, we all just walked away thinking, all right, we'll be right back, you know. Oh, no, we got right back and there was nothing.
It's a sentiment echoed by Connie Mettner of CJ's Hairstyling. Her business is downtown, but her house is just west of where the Sanford Lake used to be. She says the idea that residents won't get to vote on whether to make huge payments to help rebuild the dams just doesn't make sense.
I mean, my mom's going to get it. And she's 91. She doesn't make any more money. How fair is that? How many people, and the attitude is, well, if you can't afford, move? Mom's 91. She shouldn't have to move.
A spokesperson with the Four Lakes Task Force says before they assess properties to determine how much each resident will have to pay, a third-party group will survey homeowners about their interest in restoring the lakes. The task force says, quote, restoring the lakes has to be affordable for the community, and this will be a major factor in the decision on how we proceed. The survey is expected to be conducted early next year. I'm Ben Thorpe, WCMU News.
This is WCMU. I'm Amy Robinson. After a delay due to the coronavirus restrictions, officials with the state and Dow Chemical are once again working to plug old brine wells and protect the groundwater. Gina Harris reports.
Dow Chemical and the Michigan Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy are working to replug brine wells that the chemical company used, in some cases, as long as 80 years ago. Nearly 150 wells are being plugged in Midland, Gratiot, and Isabella counties. Jim Armbruster is the district supervisor for Eagle's Oil, Gas, and Minerals Division. He says Dow is using cement to replug wells that haven't been touched since the 1940s.
And just to make sure that the well plugs are still intact, that they're still good, and that we're still protecting human health and the environment and underground sources of drinking water.
Armbruster says the project is expected to take several years to complete. Gina Harris, WCMU News.
Get your boots and shovels ready because Michigan could see a lot of snow this winter. Above average precipitation is predicted over the Great Lakes from December through February. That's according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which came out with its 2020 weather outlook today. Whether or not it's a cold or warm winter remains to be seen. Mike Halpert is Deputy Director of NOAA's Climate Prediction Center.
While we favor colder than average conditions to the west of the lakes, mainly from western Minnesota westward, Michigan and the Great Lakes areas are kind of in between where we're able to say much. So it's kind of a toss-up at this point as to even whether we'll see a cold or a warmer winter there.
NOAA says cooler ocean temperatures from La Nina will affect winter temperatures and precipitation levels. With less than 30 days to go until the November election, polls show Democratic Senator Gary Peters and Republican challenger John James as neck and neck. Abigail Sensky reports the race for Michigan's junior Senate seat is one of the tightest in the country.
John James ran for Senate in 2018 and lost, but he got closer than people thought he would. The Black conservative millennial is a charismatic campaigner. Over the weekend, he spoke directly to voters on a campaign check-in posted to Twitter.
So I thought I'd do this video outside because it is gorgeous.
James is pitching himself as a departure from the status quo, focused on rebuilding economic and educational opportunity in the state. Early in the race, James outraised Peters several quarters in a row, but the last quarter, both candidates netted $14 million hauls.
By the grace of God and the generosity of all you out there, we're one of the only Republican campaigns in the country to match our Democrat opponent fundraising this quarter, which is really awesome.
According to recent polls, the race is now within the margin of error. Jessica Taylor is the Senate and Governor's editor for the Cook Political Report, which has the race slated as Leans D. She says the gap between former Vice President Joe Biden and President Donald Trump needs to tighten for James to have a chance.
I think that there's a good chance that Peters could run behind Biden. So I think that we could even see the Senate race be closer than the presidential race.
On an episode of Fox and Friends, James said even with Biden leading Trump by several points, he thinks a Republican ticket will win.
Well, what we're seeing on the ground with real, actual people is people are fired up. People are excited. People recognize that what's been going on in Washington isn't working. They're not believing the lies that they're being fed from the leftist media.
David Duilio is a professor of political science at Oakland University. He says he's watching key endorsements that James has received. To him, that's the operative difference between 2018, when James lost to Senator Debbie Stabenow by 6 points, and this year, where he's narrowly trailing Peters.
If James can get those votes that Stabenow got in agricultural areas like the Thumb in West Michigan, maybe it is enough to make a difference. We'll find out on Election Day.
Even though Peters' lead in the polls has dropped, the senator still has an incumbent's advantage and good favorability ratings, according to pollsters. Bernie Porn is president of the Lansing polling outfit Epic MRA. He says three big issues are on the minds of Michigan voters: reopening the economy and schools, controlling coronavirus cases and deaths, and reducing crime.
And on the issue of reopening the economy, those who chose that are solidly voting for John James. Those who cited crime in the cities are solidly voting for John James. And those who cited the coronavirus and all other issues are voting for Gary Peters.
Peters is straightforward. The moderate white Democrat is laser focused on issues like the Affordable Care Act, postal service delays, and water contamination. But his name ID for a sitting senator is low. He's pulled off upsets that didn't seem feasible before. Lately, his campaign has been trying to boost its cash and Peters' name ID, relying on senators and Democrats with national reputations.
Senator, how are you?
I'm well, Pete. How are you? Well,
in an Instagram Live with former presidential candidate and mayor of South Bend, Indiana, Pete Buttigieg, Peters laid out the stakes of the race for Democrats nationally. He's one of two Democrats up for re-election in a state President Trump won in 2016.
So right now, the polls are close. We're basically right at the margin of error, and that's why they're pouring money in. It's absolutely critical that we have the resources to keep fighting the battle.
In the last month of the campaign, he's talked nonstop about filling the Supreme Court seat. He won't be voting for President Trump's nominee, Judge Amy Coney Barrett.
We have a very real shot to take the majority in the United States Senate. It's very real. And now when we're in the Supreme Court fight, it's clear how important the United States Senate is, and having a Democratic majority is absolutely critical.
For Democrats, Michigan's Senate seat is crucial. They need it to flip the Senate and gain a majority. For Republicans, nabbing the seat would mean bragging rights and electing the first Republican from Michigan in a presidential year since 1972. In Lansing, I'm Abigail Sensky.
That's your evening news roundup from WCMU for Thursday, October 15th.